With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Emma Sasek's interview with the director, writer, and star of the film The People's Joker, Vera Drew.
Gotham City is nothing but neon biker gangs, leather freaks, and cross-dressers. Is that what you want? Come home!
No, I won't, Mom. I'm gonna be a comedian!
When I look back on my life before going Jokeman to Harlequin, so to speak, I wasn't even sure I existed. It's like blurry, cracked mosaic of all these gender revelations.
You mean she's a he?
I'm trans.
I'm sorry. Well, I'm not sorry. I was fairly certain I was in love, and I was so afraid of that feeling going away.
Ah, but you should be afraid.
I just want my happy little boy back.
I just don't feel like a boy.
You're not. Boy, I've developed an experimental treatment.
You'll be mama's happy little boy.
Also comes in rainbow for pride.
Thank you so much for your time today. I'm so excited to dive into this. I don't even know how to describe this film. I'm sure it's been described every which way under the sun, but it was truly a delight to get to watch it. So thank you for good times and the laughs from this film, and also, you know, going into very, very personal topics too. I have to say, your film is probably the first film ever that has finally showed me what it's like for people in like Gotham City or in like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, like what it's like for regular people who are not necessarily the villains and the main characters. No film ever dives into that.
Thank you. Yeah, no, I mean, like it felt like just because of like where every like US city is right now, like just in terms of like every single one's becoming like a police state and like is clear, like the class struggle isn't any clearer than when you're walking around like an American city and you see like a homeless encampment set up right next to like the ugliest fucking hugest like apartment complex that you've ever seen that's being built and clearly like probably being built by somebody who doesn't even live in the States anymore. LA is definitely that, Chicago is definitely that, and like it just felt like making a version of Gotham that was like a real genuine reflection of like what it's like to live in America right now, like both for trans people just and like everybody, like it's everybody feels voiceless and scared and broke. It's Gotham is the perfect place to do that, I think.
It is. Yeah, it's always just been so fascinating to me how so many of those elements that you just described are in all of these films, and we dive into these worlds, but it's just never really necessarily explored. It's just the hero's journey or the villain's journey or how their lives are interwoven. But yeah, I want to see what other people are dealing with and the fact that they're very similar to us in our cities.
No, totally. And it's, I think the like using Batman villains as sort of stand-ins, like both for like comedians and like just queer people, was the perfect way to kind of really lean into that, because queer people are villainized in this country. Like it's, you know, I mean, when we dropped the trailer for the movie, like I was just getting called a groomer all day. Like people immediately politicize my identity and immediately like act like I'm doing something wrong just for finally kind of being me. And I think like every queer person kind of feels the weight of having your identity immediately be a part of like discourse and politics and just the media as at whole. It's like, it's very confusing. And I don't know, like, I think like everybody can relate to that too. Like not just trans people and queer people. Like I think like cis people are also feeling very voiceless. Like everybody I know is kind of coming into a new identity in this like new era of like COVID and AI and like a completely falling apart political system on both sides. You know, I think like playing with characters that are usually just seen as like one-dimensional mentally ill like psychopaths was just super interesting and fun to sort of play with. And I've always been a DC girl. Like I've been reading comics most of my life at this point. Yeah, it's funny because, like, as you said, like a lot of those themes and things are in a lot of these like movies, like these movie adaptations of these characters, but they're not accentuated as much. They're not really like explored in a direct and sort of three-dimensional way. Mm-hmm. But honestly, with the exception of Todd Phillips' Joker, like I remember when I saw Todd Phillips' Joker, you know, I wasn't necessarily like immediately inspired to run out and make a Joker parody, but like it was this movie that I was seeing where I was just like, oh my God, like this is a comic book movie about the Joker. And it's like talking about class struggle and like mental health crisis and like a broken family system. Like I watched it as a trans woman and was like, oh my God, I relate so much to this character.
I get it.
Who also, yeah. And like, cause he also, by the end, like he gets turned into this like political messiah. And like, he's doesn't even know what that is. Like he can't contend with the fact that he's somehow like a political media figure. And I don't know, to me, that is just like very emblematic of like what the trans experience is, especially like coming out as trans, like in show business and stuff. This just seemed like the perfect sort of composite for that. And I don't know, like it's sad when I see, cause I saw like a headline this morning that I should just take as a compliment, but it was like, it was about the People's Joker and it was like, the People's Joker is like the beautiful death rattle or whatever of superhero cinema, like finally going away. And like, it's like tone complimentary. Like they're saying like, it's cool. This movie is coming in right at the end of this like wave. But I read that and I got so sad because what I really hope happens now is just like, we see more genre movies and more like comic book movies and stuff that are like this personal and this honest and overtly political and raw. Like, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, we could definitely do away with some of these like cinematic universe movies. That's getting a little old.
And I mean, I was going to say the fact that this film is so personal, goes through really kind of your life story in a way. Of course, I don't know how 100% accurate it is in some instances, but
it's completely.
Okay.
It's people keep calling it semi-autobiographical and I'm like, no.
No,
it's embarrassingly true. The only difference is I'm not the Joker, and I'm, you know, I didn't date Jared Leto's Joker, but I dated a guy who was quite like him. So, like, the movie was really just like expensive art therapy for me more than anything.
Hey, that's the best kind, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
But you know, as you mentioned, so personal, so raw. And then seeing like those types of headlines and, as you said, being politicized, even though it's just a story that you wanted to tell and one that so many other people are so excited to tell, it still sucks that we're in that kind of world where it's true on this one side, but then there's this also coming along with it too. You know, I know that this film has maybe taken you on a bit of a roller coaster ride the last few years as well. But I guess, you know, as it's about to come out in some select theaters over these next few weeks, like, how are you feeling finally, you know, be reaching this point, having it come out to wider audiences?
It's the total, like, it just feels amazing. Like, I spent a good chunk of last year kind of not really knowing what I was going to do with the movie, because like there was anticipation for it the second we premiered it at TIFF in 2022.
Yeah,
but we had like a lot of baggage that went along with that, and a lot more people found out about the movie, and the movie also just wasn't really done yet, so there was a lot of maneuvering that needed to happen to get to this moment. The first 6 months of last year, I was pretty sure that I was going to have to self-distribute the movie, which I had a lot of people try to talk me into doing. I absolutely would have done. I mean, like, maybe that would have even been like the best thing to do, like morally in a way, just because the movie is so like anti-capitalist and but we had a public facing screening at Outfest last year in mm-hmm. July, and that was what led to me meeting Frank Jaffe from Altered Innocence. And like the second I met him, I was like, oh, this is gonna all work out. Like, this is the right home for it. He gets it. Just the mere fact that he's not afraid to release the movie and like also believes that this movie is a parody and is protected by fair use. Cause there's a lot of people who fucking roll their eyes at me when I say that. And it's like, it's true. It's like, it's clearly a parody. Like, are you telling me that a movie where like Batman has a fucking Snidely Whiplash mustache and like is a little fat bean, like is a serious Batman movie? Like, grow up. Like, I'm not a dummy.
Not even Tim Burton is going down that road.
No, I mean, he might, he probably wishes he could. No, seeing some of his concept art for some of his movies sometimes, I'm like, oh, they really make him dial back how weird he is. But I'm excited for the new Beetlejuice, because it definitely seems like he's completely, the gloves are off and he's doing it. So yeah, I mean, I feel great. I feel really great, and it feels good because like, I don't know, there were various points in this journey where we had like bigger distribution models like presented to us and cool places that I would totally love to work with on other films that like just kind of weren't right for this movie, because it always really required somebody like with a real independent spirit and somebody from the queer community. Like, the fact that Frank exclusively releases movies that are queer coming of age films, it was immediately like, this is the match made in heaven, and it's gonna all be taken care of. Like, this is what I was waiting for.
Mm-hmm. And I know that you said, you know, first seeing Joker back in, gosh, when was it, 2019 or something like that, you recognize parts of yourself in that story. I know this is a boring question, but of course I have to ask, like, when did your creative process then start to take this story that is known in many aspects, but really just bring it to life with your own fascinating creative, you know, changes and flourishes? And I mean, so much animation. I mean, I could just talk about that, and I know we'll get into that. But I mean, like, that first time when you realized, okay, this is the story that I want to take.
You know, it was a very gradual process. So towards the end of 2019, like, separate from Todd Phillips' movie and just being, you know, I'd come up as an editor, mm-hmm. And a VFX artist, and eventually directing and producing as well at Tim and Eric, their production company, Absolutely Productions. And I got to work on like a lot of really amazing shows. Like, my first job in Los Angeles was I was a intern on the Eric Andre show, the first season of the Eric Andre show.
Yeah.
And then my next job was I was a camera assistant on season one of Nathan for You. And then like I was able to like get into post-production, and like I just had this beautiful, amazing comedy career in television where I got to work with all these super talented people. The end of 2019, I made this show with Tim and Eric that was called Tim and Eric's Beef House, which strangely is like become lost media. Like, you can't find it anywhere, and it makes me so sad.
I know,
because we worked so hard on that show. Like, it's so it's my favorite thing they've ever done. I mean, I'm biased because like I wrote, directed, and produced on it, but like it really felt like they were evolving into something beautiful with that show. But I was feeling really burnt out after the experience of making that. And because I just kind of had reached this point where I was like, okay, I've been doing comedy most of my life now. Like, because I started really, really young. Like, at 13, I became an improviser and then retired from it at like 24 because it was
again.
I moved to LA.
To all of our listeners of the Next Best Picture podcast, we know you love movies. We do too. Do you like going to the theater? Well, Regal Unlimited just makes sense. Regal Unlimited is the all-you-can-watch movie subscription pass that pays for itself in just two visits. See any standard 2D movie anytime with no blackout dates or restrictions. When you want to watch a movie in a premium format like 4DX, IMAX, RPX, or ScreenX, your Regal Unlimited membership gets you into those premium experiences at a reduced cost. And with Regal Unlimited, you won't just save money on tickets, you'll also save on snacks. Members get 10% off on all non-alcoholic concession items, So if you're planning to see two movies this month, just two, you need to join Regal Unlimited. Sign up now in the Regal app or on regmovies.com/unlimited. That's regmovies.com/limited. And you can tell them Next Best Picture sent you with the promo code /RegalNBP24. That's /RegalNBP24.
Well, I guess it's, now that it, like, I'm around people that are like trying to turn this into a career, it's just annoying being a performer. And I'd rather be a director. But yeah, like, I think at the end of that year, I was really just kind of confronting this like longing of like, I wanted to make a movie my entire life. Like, I knew I was a filmmaker before I knew I was a girl. And like, my earliest memories were wanting to make movies. And I got this idea just for like, it was like a body horror thing, kind of about like a drag queen who was physically addicted to irony. And it was basically just me processing how comedy had really been this space for me to like explore identity and self, but it also kind of kept me in some toxic patterns. And I was just kind of recreating my broken family system every step of the way. And I needed to make a piece of art that was interrogating that. And I don't really know what that project was going to be at that point, because it never really evolved past just like kind of writing some essays and stuff, sort of processing all those stuff, that thing. And but I knew it was like in this body horror context. And then you flash forward to March 2020, it's pre-vax COVID, everything's starting to shut down. And that also coincided with Todd Phillips. He was like on some press tour and he was talking about how woke culture was ruining comedy and how he didn't want to direct comedy films anymore because like people are too sensitive now. And like, which, look, to be fair, like, we live in very reactive times. Like, I really do think, like, people do get outraged over perfectly normal sex scenes in movies now. So I kind of understand where, like, those conversations about woke culture are coming in. But coming from the director of Joker, a movie that just made $1 billion, is clearly a comedy, is clearly a dark comedy. It's like, if anything, Joker 2019 is a fucking fair use parody of King of Comedy. It was so funny to read that and just be like, what the fuck are you talking about, dude? Like, you're fine. Like, look, you know, like, it's, yeah, like,
you have,
skiing,
you've
when
never
you're going
been more out- fine than in this moment right now.
Oh, like, if you're miserable right now, buddy, I'm sorry. Like, things are I don't know, it's just but I do get where it comes from on some level. But it was seeing that and kind of just having this career of like being a comedy and being in comedy and making comedy that is very fucked up and rude. Like, all of the shows I've worked on, there's like diarrhea and like gross dad jokes and gross like everything. Like, it was like, I and all my friends who are queer who make art or do comedy are like the most, you know, like, offensive people on the planet, but they don't hurt each other's feelings. Like, it's, you know, queer sensibility in cinema always was edgy and did push buttons and kind of offend people. So like, I think seeing all of that at once, I was like, okay, I think I need to make something Joker related to sort of process this stuff. And the first stage, sorry, I'm talking a lot, but the origins of this project are so complicated and confusing.
No,
this is actually
okay.
The abbreviated version. But that article popped up, and the woman who ended up becoming my co-writer, Brie LaRose, commissioned me to re-edit Todd Phillips' Joker. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I'll only watch this guy's movie if Vera re-edits it. Mm-hmm. And I started doing that and kind of thinking I would make like a weird, like, everything is like a feature length, everything is terrible video or something, but is kind of a gay, like, processing the queer themes in Batman. And as I was doing that, I was like, fuck this. Like, I've got this idea about this drag queen. I've got, like, I love the DC canon. I've been obsessed with it my entire life. I've got this other comedy friend, Brie, who also is out of work and not getting paid to add fart sound effects to things anymore. So why don't we write a movie together? And why don't we write, like, a trans Joker parody? And that's really where it started to take shape. And we just wrote what I think is just a beautiful script that was also impossible to film. Like, 100% an impossible to execute movie.
I know, you made it as hard as possible on yourself.
Yeah, I was raised Catholic, so I've got to self-flagellate. It's the only way to be.
I saw some people saying that this film kind of reminded them of like early John Waters filmography, and kind of that way pushing the buttons, really kind of going out there. I'm curious if John Waters, you know, was ever like a inspiration to you growing up watching those films, maybe doing this film too.
Yes to everything you said. I mean, like, I can't believe that this movie gets uttered in the same breath as him, because he's, yeah, like, one of my favorite filmmakers of all time. You know, Joker the Harlequin, like, the version of the Joker I play in the movie, like, I was really kind of pulling from, like, I had, like, three people that I was, apart from myself, because, like, the character in the movie really is just based off me. Like, the story you're seeing play out is just my story, but told with Batman and Joker characters, and all these like original queer versions of them that you've never seen before. But I was very specifically thinking a lot about three people when I was playing that part. The first of which was Courtney Love, the second Andy Kaufman, and then Divine. The through line there is just like three people that like I feel like are, there's nobody else like them that has ever existed. Were these people that like just are themselves at all costs. Like Divine could only be Divine. Andy Kaufman could only be Andy Kaufman, and Courtney. I'm like, oh God, I hope I get to meet her someday. I was thinking a lot as far as like John Waters specific stuff. I love his whole filmography. Desperate Living was the big one that I was thinking about while making this film, because Desperate Living is like, it's like a fairy tale or something. Like it's so disgusting and horrible. And like to all the Zoomers listening, it is problematic, but it's beautifully problematic and like empowering. Like there's like a T for T relationship in that movie before the phrase T for T was even invented. Like it is it's one of my favorite movies of all time. Like it's only 90 minutes long, and whenever it ends, I'm like, oh, I wish I could watch another 3 hours, because I love a queer fairy tale.
He was actually just here doing a talk for a speaker series. And I mean, it's like every thought process that goes into his head will come out of his mouth, no matter how inappropriate or any wild it may be. I mean, what a fantastic person.
No, and I mean, that's the kind of freedom that not only that I wanted to like bring to this movie, but like just going forward, like in making art, I don't really have time anymore to be coy or like play the game or whatever. Like I don't know, I worked in TV for like 10 years, so I've just talked to so many people who just like lie to your face, and it's just like I'm done. I can do nothing, but I have a little bit more of a filter than John, I think, but that's just because I'm on Adderall. And I think like the thing I really do like always try to take away from him and his art is like that honesty and that ability to just go like, oh, you think we're freaks? You think we're fucking villains? Well, here, I'll show you like a queer villain. I'll show you how disgusting I am. I'm the filthiest person in the world. Like, that's exactly what I want to hopefully espouse. Yeah.
I know we have a few minutes left together, but I mean, I just kind of wanted to dive a little bit more into, I mean, it's just so great to see a queer film just be 100%, you know, as honest, as queer as it wants to be. There's no necessarily like, you know, the usual tragic story tropes that are put in there, the let's trauma dump, all this kind of stuff. Not saying that there are not, you know, those very personal elements in this film, but I mean, it was a refreshing way to see a queer film. And I mean, I can only imagine that you probably have like a million and one other ideas in terms of how you want to and what you want to tell story-wise. But I guess what for you was the most important thing as you were tackling on as personal of a story as this, and maybe even thinking about other people who would be watching it down the line?
There's two things that I'd want to talk about here. I think the first being like, you know, I when Bree and I wrote the script, we talked about it a lot as like, I think of it mainly as like a mother-daughter story. Mm-hmm. Like it's a story really about a mother and her trans daughter and the two of them trying to understand each other. And, you know, I dedicated the movie to my mom, who I do have a complicated relationship with. Like coming out in my family was not ideal, and like I wanted to process that very honestly in my art, but I also wanted to do it in a way that was optimistic, so like realistic but optimistic, and not just like a fuck you letter to my mom, you know? Because like, if I could say she did one thing right in my childhood, it's like she always encouraged me to make art and to do that. When I started doing it professionally and she saw the kind of art I was making, she was a little had some notes, so I process that in the movie as well. Like, I think a lot of comedians go through that with their parents, where they're like, do you have to say so many filthy words? Like, you're fucking embarrassing us. So yeah, I mean, I really didn't want to make something that like would make my family feel bad or hurt anybody's feelings. And I think the other tightrope that I really walked with this one was with the queer romance angle in it, because Joker the Harlequin ends up falling in love with this trans guy in the movie, who is basically a parody of Jared Leto's Joker. Like, we use Jared Leto's, you know, Joker makeup in it and stuff. You know, that is a character also based off of a real person. Like, I had this pretty intense relationship with somebody who was a trans guy, and it was very toxic, very codependent, very abusive. But it was in that relationship that I figured out I was trans. And he was the first person that really saw me for who I was. And like, there's one thing he did right, it's like, when I came out to him, he was just like, yeah, duh. Like, it was fucking awesome. And like, I have that support. So I wanted to talk about that also in a nuanced way, how like, I think a lot of queer people get into these like relationships early in their lives, or in their queer coming out lives, where they should not be with this person for long term. This is a person that's in their life to like be their family in that moment and prop them up and encourage them. And I think a lot of the times that comes with somebody who, yeah, like you just really shouldn't be with. And I don't know, I think when writing a character like that, particularly a trans masculine character, like, I really didn't want to lean into any of the tropes we've ever seen about trans mask characters. I mean, you talk about how bad trans representation is for trans women, like, trans guys kind of have it worse, like, because they're always portrayed as like angry weirdos or like lesbians who couldn't make it work. It's like fucked. It's really fucked. And I didn't want Mr. J, who's the trans guy character in our movie, like, I wanted him to, yes, be like a realistic representation of like that toxic Joker and Harley Quinn dynamic, while also still giving him humanity and hopefully like arriving at the end of the film for both his character and the mother character, where it's like, it's not villainizing these people. It's presenting them in the context in which, like, we're acknowledging that we all live in this world where, like, yeah, we hurt each other because we're constantly being hurt. And queer people especially, like, we live in a society where we, like, completely go through life on the fringe. Sometimes we end up with people we shouldn't and in situations we shouldn't. And, like, we kind of have to figure that out on our own and carve our own path. And that's really what I wanted to do with that. And I don't know, like, it's pretty stressful. Writing this movie was stressful at times, just because like, and like, you know, then once it gets to like adding visual jokes and stuff, there was a lot of things about transness and trans culture that I was like, should I really be including this? Like, is this problematic? Or like, cause like, we have a joke about coding in the movie and how like a lot of trans women and incels are coders. And like, that's a transphobic joke and it's in the movie. But I think queer representation is so sanitized and so horrible. Even sometimes when it's made by queer people, like, they feel that pressure to make something that's accessible to cis audiences. So they make something that's like either showing us as exclusively victims or showing something that's like, look, we're just all just the same. And it's like, we're not the same. Like, two gay people being married is not the same as a man and woman being married. Like, a trans woman is not, my experience is very different from that of a cis woman. There are similarities there, but it's different. So like, our art shouldn't be homogenized. It should be honest and like actually reflect the real experience that we're having as people. Yeah, I really wanted to stay true to that every step of the way with this. And thankfully I was just surrounded by a team that was like, that only encouraged that. Like, nobody involved in the making of this movie was afraid of anything. And I needed that, because there were many times in the process where I was afraid to tell that kind of truth, I think.
No, that's awesome. I'm so happy that you had the right people around you, that you all stuck to your guns on this and said, we're doing it. And there was no like outside influence either. I'm sure, you know, bigger production companies, that probably changes a lot of people's stories too. So, I mean, I really applaud you on that.
Thank you.
Of course. We are talking today when the poster for the second Joker movie came out, was showing Lady Gaga and Joaquin Phoenix.
I didn't see it yet.
Oh my goodness.
Can I look it up right now?
Yes, please do.
Wow.
But I have to ask you, I mean, that's going to be like a jukebox musical. Are we getting a The People's Joker musical as a sequel?
Oh my God, I love this poster. I don't think I'm going to ever make a Joker jukebox musical, especially now that Todd got to it first. I mean, our festival cut of the movie kind of was a jukebox musical on some level. Oh, like, we had cover songs. Like, I'd commissioned a bunch of cover songs for the film, and I tried to license those. Like, I had a music budget to license them, and none of the music publishing companies wanted to work with us, specifically citing like our baggage with Warner Brothers. And then when I found out that Joker 2 was a jukebox musical, I was like, I wonder if they maybe had some of the same songs and that was actually the problem.
Oh my God, that would be hilarious.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see it though. Like, I get why that movie is not for everybody, and it's been politicized in the weirdest, like, shittiest ways possible, but like, I love that Joker verse, and I'm definitely going to show up for it. I pretended to be a gay guy for 6 years when I didn't know I was trans, so obviously I care about Lady Gaga. So yeah, sign me up. I can't wait for the trailer.
I know. Yeah. I think it's coming out in a few days, so we're ready.
Yeah.
Thank you so, so very much for your time, Vera. It was such a pleasure to chat with you about this film, and again, just huge congratulations on... It's been a long journey. It's been a tough journey, but it's coming out, and I'm super happy for you.
Thank you. This was so wonderful. Thanks. I'm really glad I had the chance to talk to you.
Hey, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to Emma Sasek's interview with the director, writer, and star for the film People's Joker, Vera Drew, here on the Next Best Picture podcast. People's Joker is now playing in select theaters. You have been listening to the Next Best Picture podcast. We are proud to be part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, and you can subscribe to us anywhere where you subscribe to podcasts. Be sure to leave us a review on Apple Podcasts and let us know what you think of the show. We really appreciate your feedback and your support, which you can also lend on over at Patreon. For $1 minimum a month, you'll get some exclusive podcast content from us. Thank you all so much for listening, as always, and we will see you all next time.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.